Contact here.
Captain.
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happened?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery, a wholly owned subsidiary of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison, and that was very fun for me.
Yeah. We just watched some new Trek, Ben.
Yeah, and the last new Trek before the new Trek.
Yeah.
This is listed as its own series on IMDb. I looked in the Star Trek Discovery series page to look up like actor names and stuff when I was watching this episode. It's not on there. It's on its own thing. Star Trek : Short Treks.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of leaves the option open for it to be used for all kinds of Star Trek properties, and also explains why it's so fucking difficult to find on the CBS All Access app.
Right, because CBS doesn't treat it the same way that IMDb treats it.
Yeah, it'd be great if everyone could get on the same page.
But I do like that open-endedness, and it made me think briefly about, like, what do we do with this show when there are multiple new Star Trek things happening all at the same time? Because that seems like the future we're heading into, right?
Are you proposing a greatest short offshoot?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying, like, if we're watching Picard but old, the series, and Star Trek Discovery and Lower Decks, the animated fart series, like, does the name The Greatest Discovery encompass all of that? Do we need to change the name of the pod?
I don't know. These are good questions. Questions I do not want answered by social media.
I'm sorry I brought it up, Adam.
I feel like we can come up with an adequate solution to this problem, and luckily...
You mean just you and me? And Rob's?
It sounds like we're going to have a little time to decide what to do, because I don't think they're going to be short-tracking us Picard stuff before the Picard series, right? They're not going to be short-tracking us cartoons before the Lower Decks, are they?
I don't know. I mean, we didn't know we were getting this when the last season ended, so I don't...
Yeah, that's true.
This is all uncharted territory.
I'm with you, man. As soon as there's a whiff of another short treks that is not Discovery or Discovery adjacent, let's fork all of these short treks out of the Discovery feed and plant them in a new show feed. To be named later.
That's not what I was saying at all. You are not with me.
I agree with you, Ben, totally. That is what we should do.
I hate that idea.
I'm trying to multiply our revenue streams, Ben. Don't you understand?
I'm just thinking about paying another several hundred dollars for hosting for another RSS feed. I don't understand really where the extra revenue comes in with that.
I think that is the line item that's just 20 question marks.
And then the next one is profit?
I think you can tell by this this line graph that we're in quite a bit of trouble.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Eee.
Yeah. If I just rotate this counterclockwise, hey, we're looking great.
Oh, I feel much better.
How about that, Ben?
Oh.
We can afford another show, no problem.
Hey, Adam, you give yourself a pat on the back. I'm going to give myself one. We're just two boys that are good at business.
That's us.
Speaking of being good at business, let's talk about everybody's second favorite flim-flam man. Hardcore Fenton Mudd.
Sure. As we talk about Short Treks number 4, it's the last, for now, Short Treks episode called The Escape Artist. Ben, who's the number one flim flam man?
Well, I'll just let you use your imagination for that.
Lore? Lore's pretty flim flammy.
You're gonna wake up in the middle of the night and realize I might not even be talking about an in-universe flim-flam man.
Oh, jeez. All right, fine. Well, Ben, Short Treks was written by Mike McMahon, who is the EP over at Rick and Morty, and he's also going to be the EP of that Lower Decks cartoon. mentioned in the Marin Open. So, like, Star Trek DNA mixed with Rick and Morty DNA equals a Harcourt Fenton Mudd character that is pretty Rick-like in a lot of ways, I think.
Hmm. I think that's an interesting comparison. I also think that, like, tonally, there is some fun stuff that we don't we don't see Trek dipping its toe in that often in this mm-hmm. episode, and that's kind of established with the open. We get the traditional Short Treks micro open, and then it kind of like record scratches, and we get some disco, and then that tone is shattered again with a smash cut to the interior of this Tellarite cruiser. That a shackled Harry Mudd is being sold onto.
The guy who's attached the shackles to him is Tevron Crit. Ben, feels like we're just months away from lots of people being named Tevron and not having anything to do with Star Trek at all. It just seems like one of those modern names that people are naming kids. Like, that's a combination of a couple of names, right?
Yeah.
Like Kevin and Tevin and... I guess those are the only two I can think of, but you know what I'm getting at.
Let me just say right now, if you're thinking about using some or all of my name when you name your child millennial parents, know the shame that goes along with that name. The shame that I have to bear for the rest of my eternal existence, knowing that I've committed a horrible atrocity. An atrocity so big that laws cannot be written to fit it. It's like naming your child Kittler. Or Brol Pot.
Or Juicellini. My healthy juice restaurants.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Those are wildly unpopular.
They have a Juicellini down at the mall, but doesn't seem like it's long for this world.
You know, the thing that I mean, what's better than the great juices produced by Juicellini? Are that you know the store is always open on time, Ben.
Yeah, yeah. What a fun premise. Harry is getting sold to this Tellarite by a female bounty hunter who kind of reads as female bounty hunter from Star Wars.
She kind of read as Kalar to me, like fresh out of the torpedo Kalar.
Oh, wow.
Remember what she looked like?
Yeah.
All leathered up.
Do you know what a Breen is, Adam? Or is that too far in the DS9 future?
Yeah, I think you're talking about things I haven't gotten to yet.
Because there's a kind of alien called the Breen that I think like live on an ice planet, so you never see them out of their spacesuits.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you run into them on DS9 a couple of times. So I wondered if this was somebody repping Breen. but it also really read as like bounty hunter that Leia impersonates in Jabba's palace, you know?
Oh, right. Yeah, that's a reference that I get.
Oh, man, our audience is going to turn on you. But the Tellarite, Tevron Crit, has a personal vendetta against Harry Mudd, which is, a crucial ingredient for a story that involves Harry Mudd, I think, is somebody that has a bone to pick with him.
Yeah, he's pissed because Harry Mudd slept with his sister, or at least, like, got down with her, and in the process stole a family cudgel. You can't do that, Ben.
He was deep-throating those tusks.
He got the cudgel out of the nightstand and and didn't have the good sense to return it to where it lived.
Yeah, what was this guy's sister using that cudgel for? Romance stuff?
Hey, look.
Self-romance stuff?
My policy is whatever works. If you get in there with a cudgel, get in there with a cudgel.
I think that a lot of guys get intimidated by a cudgel that big, but I think it's a credit to Harry Mudd's character that he was cool with it, you know? Like, yeah, let's bring this into the mix. Fun.
Right. We get in the process, I feel like this could be a difficult story to recap, but we get a series of vignettes, and these are sort of cute, right? We cut to flashback right on the heels of a comment that Harry Mudd makes that is immediately refuted by the footage we get in said flashback. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So if he talks about being poor to the Tellarite, we cut to a scene where he brags about being rich to get himself out of trouble. Or what is another example of this?
Well, sometimes it's like him trying the same line on a different bandianter, like, oh, we should form the resistance, or I'm in the resistance and you can join me.
He's really gotten around, though. Like he's been kicked in the face by Klingons. He's been yoked up by a spunky alien female and then dragged through a shipyard parking lot. That was a fun scene.
I really liked that. She was maybe the character that I liked the most in the whole episode.
There was also like an Orion sex prison, it seemed like.
Yeah.
Where he was interrogated by what I infer to be a couple. And that made for some fun conflict between them.
I was picturing them as sister and brother, but
I could get with that.
Who knows how the Orions get down? Maybe it's both.
The Orions are just so sexy; it's hard to tell.
Yeah, and you know, and they're down to use a cudgel on just about anybody, even if they're blood related.
Hey Ben, I bet there's no weather people on Orion, huh? it's just like eyes and teeth talking about the 5-day forecast. It's probably terrifying.
And if you look down over here, let me crouch and just next to where my mouth is, down over here.
Yeah.
Back to you, Ron.
Thanks, terrifying weather eyes and mouth. It's just a vest. a floating vest with the 5-day forecast.
Thanks for coming in, Derry, with no pants on. One thing I didn't like about the short female bounty hunter was that she lost track of her ship and Harry Mudd was making fun of her. I just think it's preposterous that this is a future where that's even possible. I feel like this is an easy edit in the script because, like, if, you know, like new cars now have like an app on your phone that tells you where you parked them, you know? So why would she not have a GPS or just be able to radio her ship and say two to transport, you know?
Well, I feel like the look and feel of this entire short treks is very dirty sci-fi, like dirty future.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like the key fobification of the modern car has made it to the future. Or maybe it has and then has been ruined by something we can't possibly know about.
Oh, yeah, man. I really liked that set, though, the big open area with all the garbage and stuff.
Yeah. I wanted to see those stalls, man. I wanted to see different ships. I understand why we can't, but...
Yeah. But I didn't love the Tellarites bridge. Like, it was... It seemed a little community theater to me.
It reminded me of Klingon ship from Star Trek V.
Yeah.
In that way. Like, very spare, like, single seat in the middle... And a bunch of doors. Like
you can see where they used spray paint to like apply texture to things.
I do not share the low opinion of that set, though. I liked it. I thought it was in keeping with the rest of the episode. Everything except for the USS DeMilo was shabby chic, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I just
very lived in.
You know, there's like pipes that obviously don't go anywhere on that Tellarite bridge. I just didn't think it was that good of a bridge. And that's in a context, I think, of Star Trek Discovery, which had generally pretty flawlessly great set design. So
now when you're designing a Tellarite bridge, you're going to want to make sure that you allow access to your sewer stack. That way, if there are any clogs, you can get right in there with a scope. I've got a scope with a camera on the front and 100 yards of cable.
Much like my arthroscopic anal surgery, We're using this cable to go down a pipe and see if we can't clear it of polyps or roots or whatever is obstructing it.
Now, it's clear from this obstruction that this Tellarite has used moist towelettes for a number of years.
He's obviously ignored the sign in the lavatory forbidding flushing anything but septic-approved toilet paper down this toilet.
We kind of crash into the USS DeMilo by the end. We get all these vignettes. We get all this double talk jive from Harry Mudd. And then the errand's over, right? Tevron Crit has made the run to the DeMilo. He's ready to drop him off. And so they beam over to the DeMilo, where they are greeted by random DeMilo guy.
They beam over in the context of Harry Mudd, like, begging for his freedom in
right.
a way that, like, he's such a slick-talking guy and is always playing an angle. Like, it seems like kind of this is the ploy of last resort for Harry yeah. Mudd to, like, literally be down on his knees begging to be essentially made into a slave for this guy.
He offers to suck his tusks.
Just like your sister, man.
he's willing to defile himself mm-hmm. with Tevron.
I loved the way Tevron played this, you know, kind of like you can't fool a fooler. Like, kind of.
Yeah. Harry Mudd doesn't look like a good tusk sucker.
Yeah. He plays along just long enough to give Mudd like a hint of hope, and then it, you know, just radios over to the DeMilo, like, two to beam over.
Yeah.
Fun.
There are many scenes in this episode that reward a second viewing, and this is maybe the one that is the most rewarding because the reaction of the DeMilo crew person here is so subtle the first time through, but is not subtle at all when you see this episode the second time. He is like, he is cleaning up space shit. Like, this is how he treats this moment.
Yeah. Oh, great. Not another one of these is the look on his face, which is, you know, this guy's being cast in a very marginal episode of television. I feel like plays it for all it's worth.
And we can tell just by looking at the DeMilo, a Del Sol class starship, its job is to clean up space shit. Like, it's not going to have a really flashy Constitution class mission.
That is not what you get to do if you get stationed on board one of these guys. He takes Tevron Crit and Harry Mudd down the hallway to a room, as he explains that this is not, in fact, Harry Mudd, but an android lookalike, a nearly perfect android lookalike. And I don't know if you noticed this, but Tevron Crit at some point in here says, "My scanner says he is," in response to the Starfleet officer saying this isn't Mudd.
Oh.
He says it, his lips don't move.
Uh-oh.
And I was wondering if it's bad loaf that you can't see his lips moving, or they looped it in, but it's a bad edit.
Well, it got past me twice, but I'm no genius, so normally when they loop something like that, it's crucial to the understanding of a character's motivations or
right
or like they need it in some way, but that line of dialogue doesn't seem necessary with a capital N, right?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like we'd be sitting here going, why didn't he scan him if
right. yeah.
you didn't
yeah.
have that line?
That seems like something that they realize during a screening of a first cut. They're like, oh shit, like of course someone would have this question. Let's head that off at the pass.
You know, that's the job we really need on Disco, is the two yuck yucks in a room that they show like early screeners to.
First cut pedants. Yeah. That's what we could be.
Yeah. You're in-house pedants to save you from all the jackholes on the internet.
Yeah. I love it.
Which we are currently.
Yeah. That's us.
But yeah, this tall drink of Bounty Hunter has been passing off bad muds all over town, and this Del Sol class starship has collected quite a few of them, and the door opens and there's a bunch of bad muds in there.
Does this scene remind you of Gremlins at all? Like the scene at Dory's when the Gremlins take over the bar and it's just like, for some reason, music is playing?
Yeah, I saw Phoebe Cates frantically trying to serve bar to all of them back there.
It's such a weird thing because Star Trek doesn't make the choice about these beings being living or not.
Right.
And so if they're not treated as sentient, why play music for them?
It might be non-diegetic music.
Okay. I mean, I thought the door opened and it felt diegetic to me, like the door opened and
yeah,
it...
no, it definitely fades up. I don't think that they're being specific about what it is.
Yeah.
But, the arm comes off the hairy mud that we've been primarily concerned with, and they all start yelling about sipping jippers on a beach.
Mm.
And it's a fun little moment.
You ever make yourself a jipper on the beach, Ben?
I have never made myself a jipper on the beach.
You want to wash off that lime juice if you're doing it outside. That's the advice.
You don't want to get a jipper burn. You know I've got that burn, right?
That's why I brought it up. It's part of your legend. It's the stuff of legend.
I thought you were just saying it to say it, not to twist the knife on that time I got a horrible second degree burn on the back of both hands.
It's why your hands are so disfigured looking.
It's actually, I don't think there's really any evidence of those burns anymore. I don't think I have scars or anything.
It's because you creamed them up real nice?
They looked bad, man.
I bet. Not fun.
I got sent home from work. They looked so bad. Nobody wanted to look at them.
Hey, Ben, you're grossing out the whole restaurant.
You know who is sipping chippers, Adam? The actual Harry Mudd.
Yeah.
He has been impersonating this bounty hunter lady. So we get to see him pull the helmet off, and he's got a very funny bridge on his ship. I noticed that he had one of those beaded seat covers that were the like required seat cover of taxicab drivers in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, he's not doing a lot of getting up and walking around, which you have to do. You have to get up once an hour. I think we all know that by now.
Yeah, well, your watch will remind you. Don't worry. This is really where they spent the set design money, this bridge. And it is full of hairy muds, so it's a lot of fun. There, all of the android muds are walking around, you know, mopping and working on building new androids and polishing his various priceless artifacts that are kind of strewn around. It's very mad scientist vibes.
Hey, Ben.
Yeah.
You think he's fucking one of those muds?
Oh, man.
Yeah, the spider just killed a couple of flies.
I mean, like, sex robot is something that I think we all know is an inevitable component of human life at some point in the not too distant future.
Did somebody say my name?
But what if Kevin had made sex robot of himself?
I feel like if I had a sex robot of me, I would just want hand jobs. That would make the most sense.
I don't know, man. I mean, you make a lot of eye contact during a hand job.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know if I could live with myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I'm glad we interrogated that whole issue. I think it's done. It's been decided. That's a bad idea. Lots of cool artifacts on this bridge, Ben.
Yeah.
You got your Mona Lisa. You got your Klingon batleths. You got a Federation helmet from a spacesuit.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun things
back there.
Hindu artifact of some kind.
I watched this scene a couple of times looking for like a whoa Easter egg. I couldn't find one. Like nothing was mind blowing. I'm sure someone will find something in this scene, but
you wanted
I wasn't
to see
able
like
to.
Data in that purple and gray suit sitting on a chair.
Yeah, exactly. They don't even try to hide him. He's like in the foreground.
he takes the helmet off, and his voice goes from being like crazy alien computer voice to regular voice. And then he takes this call, and it says vocal distortion activated, but the audio coming in is also crazy alien computer voice. Is this Star Wars, Adam?
When he has the helmet on, he sounds a little bit like a Jawa, right?
Yeah. He's going like, yarrr.
Kind of racist against Jawas, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can't tell them apart.
Do all of the hairy muds walk in a single file line? So you can't tell their numbers?
Yeah, but they also go dink, 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 dink.
And that's kind of the button on the episode, right? Hairy Mud lives on to continue selling these monstrosities and making a tidy profit in the process.
This is clearly post the episode of Disco with him in it, because the whale violation is cited in the list of crimes he is wanted for.
Hairy Mud fucks a lot of things, doesn't he? He's kind of insatiable.
Yeah, and the way he slaps that cudgel in his palm at the end makes me think that includes inanimate objects.
Yeah, I think that cudgel's on its way to his nightstand.
Once again, Mr. Mud, please get in touch.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
I medium liked it. I thought it was fun in tone. The no universal translator thing at the end kind of bugged me.
It took you out of it, huh?
Yeah, I felt like I was in the wrong universe for a moment. Although, if that's a Breen, I feel like the Breen character in Trek is designed as like an homage to Leia's bounty hunter in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And so maybe it's like a knowing nod in that way. I don't know. I like the structure of the episode, and I thought it was a lot of fun generally, but that one moment kind of bugged me. What about you?
I liked it a lot. I thought it was that kind of fun. I mean, and sometimes fun can take the place of good. I think it was it was some of both. I thought Rainn Wilson was a capable director. I liked physical wipes. You know what I mean by that? Like I liked that we got a couple of those in this ep. I thought the cutting around was fun and comedic.
By physical wipes, I'm imagining you're not talking about what the Tellarite got caught in his plumbing, though.
Now, you're not going to want to flush those physical wipes. You're going to want to put those in a separate wastebasket next to your toilet.
If the smell is a problem, I recommend putting a bowl of potpourri on the cistern tank of your toilet. Yeah, you're talking about like a character walking in front of camera, and when the shadow of that character exits frame, you realize that it's actually been a cut.
I feel like we got two or three of those. That's neat.
Yeah, those are fun.
I think there's a comedy sensibility here that Star Trek rarely gets right, and I thought they got it right here.
Yeah.
Like, because the comedy is in the reaction and not necessarily with the main character, and I think that works in Star Trek's favor when it does comedy like that. I liked it.
I think it's also really fun, just like in thinking back on these short treks, like we've seen some of the people that are going to have a hand in making these new series, and it's fun to see them, you know, get to kind of test out the waters in a sort of safe, low stakes way.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small sample size, but I think we're going to be fine with Lower Decks. Like,
yeah.
Mike McMahon, maybe, is how you say his name. But yeah, totally, totally into it. Totally competent. That'll be a great show. Like, I'm not concerned.
Yeah.
Rainn Wilson, I wonder if they're going to bring back as Mud anymore, or as a director of an episode. Like, I thought he was totally competent, too. Like,
yeah.
Keep him in the family, I say.
Yeah, fun. Adam, do you want to check and see if we have any Priority One messages?
I think we have to at this point.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from Trigar. The message is for Shrimp Colgar, Mike, and Mauk. Kind of pronounce that like Rick Ross would pronounce it, right?
Like Mauk. A Mauk.
Message goes like this. You want a tow? I can get you a tow. Believe me. There are ways, dudes. You do not want to know about it. Believe me. Hell, I can get you a tow by 3 o'clock this afternoon with nail polish.
John Goodman, eat your heart out.
Kind of a threat. A Lebowski-style threat to the three of Shrimp, Colgar, Mike, and Mock.
Yeah.
But our buddy Trigar, not the threatening type, I don't think.
Trigar got that in under the wire. Got that, ordered that P1 on the 31st of December.
Yeah. He had clearly been partying on his way to some New Year's festivities.
Yeah, that's that seems like when you start threatening to cut somebody's toe off, right? Adam, our second priority one message is from the voices on Twitter Adam has brutally silenced, and it is for you, Adam. There's a little bit of direction from the script, which if you've ever taken a screenwriting class, you know, is highly discouraged. But I'll attempt to let this influence my performance in the spirit of bonhomie. But it says, it would be best if Ben read this while making intense eye contact with Adam.
Mm.
So here I go. Disappointing. Disappointed. You need to. You should have. Why didn't you?
Ben, you kind of went away for the last 10 to 15 seconds. It was like nothing but silence.
Oh, to get chappy?
Did you read a message?
I did. Sounds like whatever filters you have set up on your computer might be preventing inbound tweets, but also other forms of media, including audio?
Yeah, I mean, I do have the disappointment filter on all of my devices, so...
I'm sorry, what? The what filter? It sounded like it kind of got distorted there for a second when you said what filter you have.
Hmm. Yeah, I think we're both running the same software.
Yeah. Huh.
Well, kind of a waste of a P1 there, if you ask me. It didn't really seem to go anywhere.
I feel bad. I wish... I hope that the person who sent this message in doesn't have those filters activated on their computer, so at least they can get experience the joy of having us read their P1 live on the air.
Right, yeah, that would be good. I mean, we want them to get value for the effort here.
Yeah.
Even though we didn't get anything out of it personally.
Well, what we did get was, you know, the money that we need to keep this podcast going, and we'd really appreciate that if you'd like to support The Greatest Discovery via a Priority One message. You know what to do. You head over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It is $100 for a personal message or $200 for a commercial message. And we anticipate those will be pretty popular as we head into proper Season 2 Star Trek Discovery.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
I did. I'm going to give it to Harcourt Fenton Mudd on this episode. I know it seems like a bit of a cheap shot, but I hope my justification for this will make it seem fair. Mudd is a con man and a grifter, but he also has a remarkable sense of self-awareness and what psychologists call insight. If he is able to design an android that is as shifty as he himself is.
Yeah.
Like, these androids are a perfect facsimile of his personality. And I'm going to do a little headcanon and say that outside of the context of being in the possession of a bounty hunter on their way to being turned into the Federation, they probably would kind of run out of repertoire of believable behaviors. Mm-hmm. But what they are capable of is perfectly on character for Harry Mudd. And I love the idea that he is the shameless grifter that he is, but also like sees himself for what he is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, these robots really gave Noonien Soong's creations a run for their money, because these guys can use contractions and whistle, Ben.
Yeah.
They can do it all. Data's kind of a pile of garbage compared to these multi-muds, right?
Well, that's why the headcanon of them kind of not having any believable characteristics outside of a very specific context is so important.
Right.
But I feel like I shouldn't have had to supply that headcanon.
Kind of like me in that, like, I'm only smart in a very narrow way. I'm not generally smart the way other people are, like you.
Oh, Adam, don't sell yourself short.
Ben, my Shimoda is the imbecile Orion guy who falls for the line about looking good in a cape. I just really liked everything about him. I liked Katy Perry, his
co-torturer.
Yeah, his co-Ryan. I liked them both together. I could have used 10 more minutes of them, of them just fighting over Fenton Mudd. I thought they were great. You talk about like the economics of someone's screen appearance. I thought both of those characters did a ton with very little.
Boy, I really agree. They kind of reminded me of the Casey Affleck and Scott Kahn characters in Ocean's 11. Like,
very good call.
That level of kind of like all-purpose criminal element, but also very dumb.
A couple of criminals who will punch each other in the shoulder because one or both of them is fucking up.
Yeah.
That kind.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Good times with them. Bring them back, is what I say.
Yeah, bring them back. Bring them back.
Oh, Ben, you know what's coming back on the greatest... What is the show called?
The Greatest Discovery.
Ben, you know what's coming back...
We haven't changed the name yet. How could you possibly forget?
You know what's coming back on the Greatest Discovery. It's us with brand new Star Trek.
Yep, more brand new Star Trek headed down the pike. And the next episode will be the first where we're back on our weekly schedule.
Yeah.
Reviewing episode 1 of season 2 of Star Trek Discovery.
So that premiere episode drops on Thursday, January 17th, which means there will not be a Short Treks on the 15th. We will be back here on the 22nd to discuss that first episode of season 2. And then every week thereafter until that second season's done.
Looking forward to it.
Me too, Ben.
All right. Well, we will chuck the thermal detonator to Rob here. Let him blow out the end of the show. But thanks so much for listening. And tell your friends about The Greatest Discovery as we kick off season 2.
Yeah, highly recommend catching up on season 1 of Star Trek Discovery, as well as all of the episodes of The Greatest Discovery leading up to season 2. And thanks for all your support up until now and for experiencing these off-season episodes with us. I think it's been a load of fun.
Yeah. An experiment that I'm really glad worked out as well as it did.
Yeah, me too.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast. It's hosted by Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison, and it's produced and edited by me, Rob Schulte. Our theme music is by Adam Ragusea. Would you like to support this show? Of course you do. Head on over to MaximumFun.org/donate and pledge your loyalty to The Greatest Discovery. There are other ways to help us out too. You can head on over to Apple Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice and leave us a 5-star rating and review. It really helps us move up in the rankings. When tweeting about the show or sharing on social media, use the hashtag GreatestGen or GreatestDiscovery. We'll see you next time after the guys watch Season 2, Episode 1 of Star Trek Discovery.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.